Hello, everybody. Welcome to Geek Tyrant Weekly, episode number 66. Today, we're just going to talk about a bunch of news and stuff. A lot of the big releases that came out this past Friday, we reviewed 2 weeks ago, so check the podcast archives for
we screwed the pooch stuff. On that one.
Yeah, we really did, because we did 6 reviews in 1 week, which was really ridiculous.
We felt like... we got all the chips up front.
Yeah.
Well, it's because we
threw it all on red, baby.
Well, we had been behind by like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So it was like we felt like we had to catch up, which we did.
Yeah.
And then we got further ahead.
We caught too far up.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm Ben P. Let's go around the circle, do a little intro.
Mazer.
Abe Froman.
All right. And today, basically, since we don't have much to talk about by way of reviews, we'll just be talking about a bunch of movie news and stuff like that.
Although... I do have to say, we did, me and Bankman, who is usually here with us, we saw Waking Sleeping Beauty.
Yes, we recommended that everybody go check this out last week, if you could.
It delivers.
What did you think?
It delivers. I don't want to get too far into this. I want to get in discussion with Bankman.
Okay.
Which we can do, because, I mean, it's
very
limited release.
Yeah.
It's not open.
Which I don't think it's going to open wide.
Okay.
I doubt it.
It doesn't seem like a film that's going to be wide.
Yeah.
I don't think you'll ever see a commercial on TV.
Yeah, probably not.
Some of you might not even be able to get it until it's on,
right?
Blu-ray or whatever.
Yeah.
But just a little background info. It takes place, or it covers Disney from 1984 to 1994, from the depths of just hemorrhaging money with these expensive films that they knew weren't making money, but just to keep the Walt Disney legacy alive, to becoming, you know, through up until Little Mermaid, Aladdin, Lion King, Beauty and the Beast, until they became the dominant factor.
Yeah.
Literally the most successful. Fictional franchises properties.
Yeah.
The most.
Do they talk about how VHS and stuff properties. Factors into?
Yeah, they do. They cover how they started re-releasing the old stuff, which they said they wouldn't do in the first place. And then started doing it, started making millions, and they kind of re-energized it as well.
Yeah.
But it's just...
Because I know for myself, like, I never saw any of those classic things until I saw them on VHS.
In the 90s.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, they do say up front, like, it was a perfect storm. And you watch it, and you're like, how did they pull this off?
Yeah.
It's an amazing, amazing story. Recommend it, and then when Venkman's here, hopefully next week,
we'll get into it in a little bit more detail.
We'll get into the jacked up world of business.
Cool. Sounds good. So, what are we going to talk about? We've got a couple things on the slate. Why don't we go ahead and knock the small one out? 3D tickets. The price of 3D tickets have apparently gone up as of last Friday. That's the news, and as if 3D tickets don't cost enough.
Here in LA, it costs about IMAX is about $18,
and they're going to go up more. It's weird because you can pretty much what we're saying. I mean, well, when this article was released, it was tomorrow is going to be so today. It's already been happening,
right?
So AMC theaters, Cinemark, and Regal.
I think it's kind of lame because you can buy two albums, full albums, on iTunes. For the cost of admission to watch, not own,
to watch one movie for 2 hours.
So just in a little info, for IMAX 3D stuff, it's going up. For 3D prices, it's going up 8%. IMAX is going up 10%. The 2D stuff is only going up 4%.
I felt like they just did a price increase like not even a year ago, didn't they?
It's cheaper for me to go fill up my gas tank than it is.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I haven't been out in Los Angeles that long, but I feel like even back in Florida, like, they just recently raised the prices.
Yeah,
but
I feel like they just did that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what can we say besides the fact that, like, this is just an obvious money grab from the studios?
Yeah, which is funny because, like, now if you go to watch a film... I think it's like the matinee price is like $6, which is probably $1.50 off of what a full price ticket was, probably around 2001.
Yeah.
Well, they're already reaming you on the concession stand. Like, that's like the worst raping ever. Is like, not that any rape is good by any means, but like you go and you're like, okay, cool, $5 on a soda. gotta get popcorn. $6 on a large popcorn, and yeah. Just, like, it's like I might as well go to Disneyland.
It's no wonder like pirating films and stuff is becoming such a rampant thing nowadays. But there was like a little infographic. I don't know if you saw that a while back that had like the differences between watching a movie on DVD and watching a pirated thing, and like the one on DVD takes you through like 10 or 15 different slides of like the FBI warnings and like the trailers that you don't want to see and the main menus and like the animations through the menus and all this stuff. Okay, yeah, and then the pirating one is just like play and then the movie starts. But I'm not advocating piracy, obviously, but I'm just saying that with business moves like this, studios
and they're already forcing us to watch ads, previous to the trailers, and then trailers are themselves. Ads.
They've been sticking more trailers, more and more trailers into films.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I'm fine with.
I'm trying to think of the film I saw recently that it felt like there was 20 minutes of trailers and it may have very well
been. Wonderland.
Okay.
That was it. You're just like, oh my gosh. Please.
Yeah.
I think maybe because we had an IMAX showing, so we had the regular trailers.
And then the IMAX stuff too. Trailers. Yeah.
Not fun times, especially been watching Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, it's just like they're gonna have to make a really awesome 3D movie for me to pay to see it in the theater. You know what I mean?
Like, Clash of the Titans is coming out, and I'm not gonna watch it.
Yeah, I wouldn't see it in 3D if I had the choice. You know?
Yeah, 3D is supposed to be kind of the deterrent too.
For
piracy, because you have to have the glasses. But
yeah.
If you live in the L.A. area, the Lemley, go watch some indie films there.
This is definitely, I think, a big hurt towards IMAX and towards just 3D in general. This does not seem smart in any way, especially since I know, technically speaking, that these projectors that they're putting in have been lowering in cost by, like, half.
Yeah, so they can't be like, oh, man, we're bringing you this new technology. It's going to cost money at first. No,
it's getting cheaper and cheaper. It's cheaper than a film projector at this point, and it's at the same resolution. There's no... I mean, I'm talking about like a 4K projector.
They got to do something somewhere to make money, but I just wish it wasn't on the consumer end. Like, I wish they could cut costs somewhere else.
Well, this is also in a reflection of what a rumor out there, that they're going to be holding back all rentals of films and stuff by a month.
Yes,
you cannot rent a film or get it on Netflix or whatever.
They've already begun doing that.
Yeah. I think Blockbuster's got some exclusive deals. For like The Blind Side or something, like you can only get it at Blockbuster for a month or something
before. That's not going to save Blockbuster.
that's another discussion, but
I'm not going to go, oh, cool, I'm going to sign up for Blockbuster. I'm just going to go, well, you guys release these things so quick anyway. An extra month doesn't really seem like that long anyway.
That's like a couple years ago. That's like what you would have waited normally. But yeah.
Or if you're watching a Christmas film, it's like, well, I won't see this in a year.
Yeah. Cool. So I recently got to check out this Xbox Live arcade game that I've been wanting to check out. I saw it on a few different places, on Game Trailers. I saw the boys on the Totally Rad show talk about it, and that game is Shadow Complex. This came out in August of last year. Better late than never. But it's one of those games that's kind of just, it's out there. And it's one of those Xbox Live Arcade games that you don't, like, they don't have, like, a launch thing that's like, ooh, check this out. So it's for us to get to it late, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
I just recently started playing this game, Tetris.
So you can buy Shadow Complex from the Xbox Live Arcade, is that right? Or the Xbox Live, whatever they're...
Yeah.
I've got a PS3, so I'm not sure what the terminology is for the Xbox, but they've got like a...
Yeah, you just have a... It's
live
like the
marketplace. Right?
Yeah, that's marketplace. Okay. Yeah, it's pretty much like... Yeah, exactly what you have there. It's about $15. But basically, it just reminds me of like Contra, and it reminds me of Metroid. It's basically this great 2D, like, linear side-scroll type of game, but it has this completely redone feel. It uses like the Unreal 3 engine to get just like a really interesting look to it.
Yeah, I saw some clips of it just a little while ago, and it looks like kind of almost like Uncharted, but side-scrolling, you know, with, it's got that same kind of dark tones and stuff, and most of it takes place in a building, from what I understand.
Yeah, you're in the Shadow Complex. But the cool thing is, like, there's very few basic controls, but, like, I'm playing the game, and I'm trying to do a wall jump, but you can just jump to a wall and do nothing. But if you do it in a certain way, you can jump to the wall, and then you can, like, kind of scramble up and then jump to another wall kind of thing.
Nice.
Or in other games, like what, Prince of Persia, you can kind of just do it, and then it's auto for you. But games like this that remind me of the games of, like, the 90s and the 80s, you kind of have to earn it in your dexterity.
Yeah, you have to work
so much of those games were just jumping.
Yeah.
I think
the
first Mario games, that's all it was, really.
Yeah, and I just got a jetpack thing, so I'm like, there's a jump, then there's a hold jump for a higher jump, then if you hit, like, a hold jump plus an additional jump, you get, like, this air burst, and you go even higher, and if you hit, like, a wall, you can, like, scramble on the wall, and then do it. So it's like there's things that seem impossible to get to, but if you find a way to...
And have the right timing. And
have the right timing, because there's so many things I've had a problem with.
Yeah.
There's a whole thing where you basically have, like, basically, like, this huge grid, and you work your way through this grid, but it's not, like, in a straight line. You're moving all around. Usually, sometimes you see a question mark on something, and you go, there's some kind of hidden thing here, and it takes forever to find what that thing is. Or
so, do you know, have you played enough of it to know whether you're, like, trying to get to the roof of a building, or you're just kind of, like, going through the building just because? Like, what's the story aspect?
So the storyline is, from what I've been able to play so far, is you are someone who is possibly going to be some kind of special forces training or something like that, and you give that up, and you're just trying to have a normal life. You go backpacking with your girlfriend, and...
Bad idea.
Yeah. And I think she's a spy. But anyway, she gets kidnapped, and you end up basically trying to destroy this complex that has weapons that are going to destroy all of civilization.
Awesome. So. I love weapons that are possibly going to destroy all of civilization.
Yeah. I think they're going to try to, like, you know, destroy a city and then take it over. And, one of those kinds of... Yeah.
Cool.
There's a very loose story to it. Most of it is the gameplay.
Yeah.
Which is, it just, if you love those side-scrolling games, you'll love this. But especially because it has such a new feel to it with the graphics. And I don't know.
Side-scrolling games are so cool, man. Like, a lot of them still hold up for me. Like, recently I went back and played one of those X-Men games for the Sega Genesis, you know what I'm talking about? Where, like,
that was your favorite game growing up.
It was great. Like, you can use Nightcrawler and, like, stand right next to somebody and teleport with them, you know, like, through a wall and stuff like that. Like,
no, that's different. I'm talking about the old school Uncanny X-Men arcade game where there's four arcade controllers, but...
Okay. Yeah, this one was for Genesis. But regardless, I mean, all those kind of, like, the Ninja Turtles game, you remember arcade Ninja Turtles game?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are great. This, I mean, from what I've seen, Shadow Complex looks like a really cool, like, kind of update of that kind of thing. And the one of the cool parts about it that I noticed was, for the most part, it is 2D. You're just moving kind of from left to right across the screen.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because you'll have characters who are attacking you from far away.
Yeah.
But you can't walk over there. And there's some certain things. Imagine, like, a staircase that is going away from you and then back. Like, you can't just walk the staircase. You have to jump from one level to the next
because
you don't walk the stairs.
Yeah. And, like, one of the things that I saw was, like, sometimes you'll have people shooting at you from, like, Z space, you know, from, like, off in the depths. And you can, like, you know, most of the time in the game you're traversing, like, directly from one side to the other. But you can also turn and look, like, deep, you know, into the screen almost, and, like, fire back.
Yeah, you use your right stick to do that, and it really works more like it doesn't work like in Z space, it works more like a clock.
Oh, okay.
Kind of like Contra, pretty much.
Yeah.
Duck Hunt space.
Yeah. So it works in that way, but it's funny because, like, there's a few, like, every person you come across, no matter how huge in size they are, if they're a person, not the robots, if you just walk up to them, you can kill them no matter what. There's, like, no fight anything. There might be something later, but...
Oh, really?
Yeah. Just sneak up on a guy and just kill him in, like, 2 seconds.
That was your father.
That sounds like a cool game. So, I mean, it sounds like you'd definitely recommend it for everybody, right?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, what's funny is I used to hate these platform games. But in this particular game, it's just... There seems to be... Have eliminated the... Because if anyone has ever pulled out, like, an old console game and, like, stuck in that cartridge and fired it up and tried to... It feels so, like, there's a delay and there's all sorts of problems. And you're just like, why does this feel so bad? And this has, like, the feeling of what you remember it feeling like.
But without the actual technical
issues that we had back in the time.
Nice.
So, yeah, definitely recommend.
You don't have to blow on it through your shirt or anything.
No.
Cool, yeah. If I ever lock down an Xbox, I'm definitely checking it out.
Mazer and Venkman holding them both consoles.
All right, another piece of news we wanted to talk about is Angelina Jolie is apparently being rumored for the role of Maleficent in Disney's kind of live-action retelling of the Sleeping Beauty story. This is something that we've seen very recently with Alice in Wonderland, and but this version of Maleficent is supposed to be... Maleficent, as most of you, I'm sure, are aware, is the kind of, like, evil character, evil, you know, Disney villain... in Sleeping Beauty, and this new movie is supposed to be kind of told from her perspective, as opposed to from, like, the protagonist's point of view, okay. Which is interesting. It kind of reminds me of, like, Ridley Scott's Robin Hood. You remember what that used to be? Like, the story for Robin Hood, it used to be called Nottingham, and it was going to be told from the Sheriff of Nottingham's point of view, which I always found way more fascinating than what they actually turned it into.
Yeah, it'd be, like... Robin Hood's just
like he's presence. Kind of, yeah,
or, I think the way, like, they've done it in the what I've seen from the trailer is they've tried to make Robin Hood seem like he's more a person fighting for freedoms.
Right. Well, yeah, and in the original, like, kind of go around, he was going to be more of, like, almost a terrorist figure, and the Sheriff of Nottingham was going to be the protagonist in it, which I thought. I mean, again, I thought that was really interesting. But so back to Maleficent.
After they abandoned that, yeah, go back to those.
Yeah, Linda Wolverton, who wrote Alice in Wonderland, Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland, which just, was in theater, or I guess is still in theaters
now. She did Beauty and the Beast as well.
Yeah, I didn't really realize that. Only after reading the story did I, go back and check out some of her work, and she's been responsible for a lot of, the great Disney stuff over the past few years. Well, not few years, but past decades, even. You know, she's been around for a while.
That we talked about earlier in this podcast.
And there's rumor going around that Angelina Jolie is interested in, or, you know, is being rumored to play the role of Maleficent. Also, that Tim Burton might direct this story. So, what do you guys think? How do you feel about that? Both accounts. Angelina Jolie as this kind of Disney villain with a twist, and or Burton's involvement.
She has that kind of the look for it, definitely, for how that character is in the Disney films.
Yeah.
But if it's told from... If they tell just that event, I guess so. But if they're trying to tell, like, a backstory, like Wicked...
Yeah.
I'd want someone who can kind of not come off straight off like an evil witch, like Angelina Jolie is
right.
In real life.
Well, she does kind of have, like, harsh features and stuff. Like, yeah. I don't know about harsh. She doesn't have harsh
she
features,
has
but her
strong
features,
like, that are very sharp.
Yeah, yeah, sharp.
I think she has the ability to be someone unbelievably vulnerable on screen and to be a female... Be a
changeling.
To be a female character who is badass.
Yeah.
Who you can go, okay, don't mess with that chick.
Yeah. Her range is pretty... incredible when you look at it.
Yeah,
like,
and
that.
Also, we've seen chicks who, well, I shouldn't say chicks, but we've seen women play roles. Let's say Mila Jovovich.
Yeah,
very pretty, same type of angular features, same kick-ass, able to emote that.
Yeah.
But I don't see her being able to be soft in a role or something where, make me believe she's uber intelligent.
Yeah.
The way I think Angelina Jolie could do.
Yeah.
And I think, let's be honest, villains are usually more interesting.
Right.
And villains have to win all the time, and heroes only have to win once. Right?
I guess that's true, yeah. Yeah, because
so
otherwise...
So as a villain, you need to be not a very good villain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I never thought about it like that.
Yeah. So I think it would be interesting to see... I mean, they have the fairy tale aspect to it. I don't know. I've always been interested in seeing kind of a villain story, but always seeing how a villain would outsmart heroes consistently would be something interesting to see.
Yeah, it's almost like a Wild West mentality of, like, you know, you're the best gunslinger, you know, and you've always got the up-and-coming kids trying to take you down, you know, like quick draw style and stuff. Yeah. So that would be... It's kind of that dynamic, but, you know, transplanted into this Disney world. I don't know. For me, I agree with absolutely everything you just said about Angelina Jolie. I think she would be good for this, and it would probably be good for her career to do something like this. Yeah. And I think Tim Burton is probably a bad choice for this movie,
I think so, too. He's great at directing visual... pieces, and he can work with female characters, but as far as making a female character the central character, we have not seen that from Tim Burton.
Yeah, even in Alice in Wonderland, the focus shifted to Mad Hatter.
Yeah,
very quickly.
Well, as the posters just have the Mad Hatter, not even Alice in it.
Who's to say things might be different if Angelina Jolie is the star of your movie? You're pretty much going to have to base it around her, but. With that being said, I just don't think... I think Tim Burton needs to go back to making something like Big Fish, which is my favorite thing that he's ever done. Yeah. And I think, you know, just relying on these, you know, Sweeney Todd and now Alice in Wonderland, and these kind of, like, pre-established properties.
Tell some American fairy tales.
Yeah, Corpse Bride even, I think, was a... I want to say was, like, a book or something beforehand. I'm not quite sure about that, but like... Yeah, and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, like, all the recent projects that Tim Burton's been involved with had an audience going in and that whole thing. I think it would best serve his creative instincts to kind of tackle something that nobody's really seen before. Even though Maleficent sounds like kind of an original take on it, it's still, like... You know, I think people would roll their eyes if they see, like, you know, you can just imagine the first trailer for this movie, like a Tim Burton directed, like that College Humor video.
Oh, yes. It nailed it pretty perfect.
With Danny Elfman doing the music. Like, dun, 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 dun. Bum, 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 bum. We'll link to that in the show notes if you guys haven't seen it. It's pretty awesome. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean... I think this project...
He has his go-to moves.
Yeah, definitely. This is right in his wheelhouse, which is why I'd like to see somebody else do it.
Yeah. But as far as Angelina Jolie,
I don't even question it.
Yeah.
I just think Burton... it seems like it's just like a bunt. It's just like, let's just go base run. Guys, go base run. But it doesn't seem like this could be a knockout with Tim Burton attached to it.
Yeah.
Because I feel like he's lost his mojo for trying. Yeah, he's doing the same stuff. He's not experimenting.
Yeah.
It would be cool to see him, because I think even if he tried to experiment with something, his taste would still be intact, and that's what we want to see. That's all we.
I'm surprised they're not fighting to get Wicked adapted before this gets to the screen.
Well, last year, or maybe back in 2008 or something, I heard that Wicked was being picked up to be made into a movie, but we haven't heard anything as far as forward progress on that project, which is surprising, because Wicked is one of the few, like, shows that I've actually seen, like the Broadway musical or whatever. I didn't see it in New York or anything, but it was an amazing show. Like, it's a great story.
Feels like it would have been more hot to do this 2 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, right? Yeah. Definitely. By the time they get it out, who knows if people will even really remember it anymore. But it's still, I mean, if they get the right cast and stuff, which they should just get the cast from the original Broadway version, because they were great. And
not do what they did with the producers.
Right, or with Mamma Mia or something, you know, like, just, I feel like it has
a... For producers, they had most of the...
No, but it was a bad film.
Oh, okay, awful, terrible.
Not do that, make a bad film is what they should do.
Do it good.
I think Uma Thurman was the only person who was, like, and she actually didn't...
I think it's just the whole direction they went. They made it feel like you were watching a play, really, even though you weren't.
Yeah.
They made it feel very stagey.
The best film felt very flat. The best film that I saw that was like an adaptation from a stage play that worked really well, but still had some of the trappings of a stage play.
The Rachel Weisz, Paul Rudd. What is that called?
Oh no, I'm not thinking of that. I'm thinking of Titus. with Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I've never seen that movie. I've seen clips of it, and it's looked good. Absolutely insane. It's I think good. Julie Taymor directed that. She's the chick who was going to be doing the Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark or whatever, the Broadway play of Spider-Man. And that's been having some problems lately, so I don't even know if that is even in production anymore. I mean, I know they had cast it, and, like, U2, Bono and The Edge had written music for it and stuff, and it was, like, close to actually going on, you know, in front of people.
Spider-Man! And...
But, I think that's pretty much fallen apart now. But, yeah, Julie Taymor directed Titus, and she did you know, Across the Universe and... A couple of these other things. She's got this insane visual style.
Yeah. The Shape of Things, that's the movie I was referring to. The Paul Rudd, Rachel Weisz, Gretchen Mol. That was a stage play.
I like Gretchen Mol. I haven't seen her anything.
But I think I saw
yeah, it. I've seen it.
That was amazing.
I think it's more just because the performance is great. Nothing about what they did visually was...
Yeah, visually it wasn't. But yeah. just that, like, how
it was well just a, it was just a good story.
And they ended up shooting it, like, they had a really short shooting schedule, and the... physical transformation that Paul Rudd goes through, where it seems like they it looks like they took months between it, but really that's just a little bit of makeup, stuff like that.
Yeah, a little bit of makeup and having padded clothing previous.
Yeah.
So I think what that means is Paul Rudd should play Prince Charming Prince Philip.
Gretchen Mol, Sleeping Beauty,
in Maleficent.
Actually, you know, I think could pull off the role. Maybe better. Actually, well, I don't think she has the look of Angelina Jolie, but I think maybe if they do more of an origin backstory, maybe.
I don't think it's going to be that.
Yeah, I was going to say Cate Blanchett, where you'd really like to see, like, you could see her being vulnerable, or you could see, like, how
yeah, but she just looks would evil you to me too?
In some things, yeah, I don't know.
Okay, yeah,
yeah. If we're just throwing that out, I mean, we kind of explored.
Well,
actually,
yeah,
we haven't thrown any of the directors who we'd like to see.
Well,
directed.
I think it's just
no
who,
one.
Who
someone
I just
besides.
Named off? What's her name? Who did Titus?
Oh, yeah,
yeah, Julie Taymor.
Yeah, Julie Taymor.
But someone besides Tim Burton and a stage.
Well, we don't really know exactly like what direction this movie's gonna take, like the finished product, like whether or not it's gonna be an origin story or if it's more of like a. More of like a Wicked thing, like a love lost and this is why she turns evil type of thing, or if maybe she, like, the movie starts out and she's already evil, or if, like, we don't even know if it's going to be told depicting her in a positive light. So I think a lot of those decisions are going to be taken into account when they choose the director to see what, I mean, because you could do it with, like, a musical and have Mark Webb direct it, or you can do, you know what I mean? Like, there's so many different ways that you can take it. Just based on the concept alone, we're just going to need some more details before I think we can start doing, like, dream casting for directors, but...
They should at least explain how she got the nickname, what's it? Badass Baracus. They should explain that. That could be something different.
Yeah, I think I think she's like the mistress of all evil or something. But Badass Baracus is close.
As we speak, something like some crazy casting.
Something
is
insane is happening.
Because
I'm sure it is.
Whenever we record a podcast, like crazy Spider-Man news breaks.
Yep, Spider-Man.
We talk about a rumor. It's like it gets confirmed or something like that. Last week we went into this huge deep discussion. Like, no, Chris Evans was offered the role of Captain America. Chris Evans should play Captain America. No, John Hamm, he's the best choice. And as soon as we...
By the time I got home, which was like 30 minutes later or something, after we stopped recording, the news was confirmed that
Chris Evans
grabbed the spot as Captain America.
Takes up the shield. Chris Evans will
takes
don
up the shield?
Yeah. Chris Evans will don spandex once again.
The star-spangled spandex.
Yeah.
So yeah, obviously that news is confirmed.
What?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it last week, so, I mean, if you want, like, kind of more of an in-depth thing, go back and check out last week's podcast. As far as just, like, brief, you know, kind of concluding thoughts on it, though, I'm happy about it. Like, I said it last week that out of all the names that were brought up, I think, all the names that were legitimately brought up, like, not just dream casting by us, I think... Chris Evans is fine. I think you brought up a good point about how Alex Ross was suggesting maybe somebody older needs to play the role to kind of be like a leader in, you know, patriarch, in the Avengers mythos. But I think Chris Evans has proven, you know, with his role in Sunshine and other things, that he's got the what it takes to be that
machismo.
Yeah, he's got what it takes to lead that team. What I'm really looking forward to now is seeing him and Robert Downey Jr. on, like, share some screen time. I think that'll be very entertaining. But what do you guys think, just as, like, kind of final wrap-up thoughts about Chris Evans as Captain America?
Well, I think especially, just think of the dynamic that Iron Man and Captain America have, that they end up having together. I think it's going to be an interesting to be able to see how that develops.
Yeah. I want to say, and I didn't read it, so I may be missing.
Do we know the time period? I think there's a synopsis or something out there, right? About Captain America and
BS synopsis, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's all kind of like, it's all just like common sense. The synopsis that's out there is like, Captain America injected with the super soldier serum.
Yeah, we know
like,
when he
really
starts.
Great.
We just don't know, does it take through World War II, or are we...
It's supposed to be a period piece, from what I understand, and then end of it, I think they'll probably do the thing where, like, he gets frozen or whatever, okay. Whatever happens.
And then we have Hugo Weaving as the Red Skull.
Mm-hmm.
Someone said that wasn't confirmed, but I thought it was.
Really? I'm pretty sure it was.
I'm pretty sure it was, too. Yeah.
I think
they've got a shoot date scheduled, so they've got to be nailing these things down.
Yeah.
This isn't as talked about as Green Lantern with Ryan Reynolds, but I think people seem more pleased with it than they were with Ryan Reynolds. Like, as far as, like, the kind of jeering goes, I think a lot more people are...
Yeah, and also Ryan Reynolds kind of broke the mold of playing multiple superheroes.
Yeah.
And obviously Chris Evans is got that same, you know, kind of criteria. So
yeah,
I think it's just a little bit easier to swallow.
To an even less degree, because they're completely rebooting Fantastic Four anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not like Ryan Reynolds, he's simultaneously... playing.
Right.
Those that don't know... Marvel only controls certain properties, and they've sold like Spider-Man and Fantastic Four and
Wolverine,
Silver Surfer and the
X-Men
and Wolverine off to these different studios.
Sony and Fox.
So when we're doing an Avengers film or something like that, they can't use any of those characters.
Yeah.
because they've sold out those. Eventually, they probably have some sort of 50-year clause or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
Who knows? Or just sold it off completely, but...
Right.
I wish they would put those back in the hands of Marvel.
Well, the only reason that they're rebooting the Fantastic Four franchise anyway is because it's so they can retain the rights to it, or else they would forfeit it if they don't have a movie. Mm-hmm. So,
but yeah, I mean, Abe Froman, what do you think about Chris Evans' Captain America?
I like it. I'm totally fine with it. I think what's funny is there's been some fan made posters that look pretty good.
Yeah,
but they just they're not, I guess they don't read what they're having tailed for the costume, which is that the red stripes in the torso are going to be straps, and it's going to be a more practical costume. They're really going more of what Captain America would look like in the future.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
About the fan-made posters being more
of
a traditional costume.
Well, it's because the stuff they have, it's basically game art that was made to have Chris Evans in it.
Yeah.
I mean, this kind of stuff happens all the time with comic book movies and you know, fan participation, things of that sort. We're gonna see, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. I mean, Mazer even made one for
Greenlander Ryan Reynolds. Yeah, I did that one back then. But that was it was almost more the mask, about the mask and the seal in there. Those are always hard to, because you can't.
Well, yeah,
the people
who
are
judging the movie.
Yeah, the people who are designing these costumes have probably spent months and months and gone through 10 to the 100 iterations with the director.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. But as far as Evans, I'm totally cool with it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Not balls to the walls ready, but yeah.
It's just basically, like I think I said, we're going to have to wait until we see the trailer.
Yeah.
That's when we make up our minds.
Yeah.
Right? When we go, oh, hey, Fantastic Four looks really crappy. That's when I made up my mind.
Yeah.
And then I watched it, and I was like, that's actually not as bad as I thought. And then the second one wasn't. Well, I like the Silver Surfer in that one, but...
Yeah.
What?
Galactus as a Cloud was kind of an epic fail, but...
But those movies were good. Oh,
The second one was good. The parts was
they're just entertaining. They weren't great.
Yeah.
I think they're what people expect out of comic book movies, not the type of entertaining, transcendent kind of thing where you get out of, and we had, like, Iron Man, and we had Batman. Nolan's Batman.
Yeah.
To be exact. But there's we've had some comic book films that have obviously not been as great, like Wolverine, I would say.
Oh, there's plenty of them out there. Elektra, yeah. Daredevil, all the, yeah.
Yeah, Punisher has yet to have a really... Punisher is a weird character to try to make a film out of anyway, in any case.
It's hard to relate to a guy who just, like, straight murders people. But...
We had a terrible spawn. I think there's, like, what people expect out of a comic book film, and those have been delivered pretty... Those are pretty easy to deliver, but I think it's when trying to make it something for a broader audience, like J.J. Abrams was able to do with Star Trek, is when you come into, like, the difficult moments where it's just a little bit of this and a little bit of that makes such a huge difference in terms of tone.
It's been about 2 years since Big Willie Style has graced us on the big or small screen in a fictional role.
Okay.
I mean, obviously he's appeared on many shows as himself, as he would say. But
we're talking about Will Smith. To clarify, if you're not a fan of his rap career, which I know I am, and I own Big Willie Style, I bought it the day it came out in like 97 or whatever, but Will Smith, what's the news? He's choosing between two projects or something? That's the story right now?
Yeah, he's choosing between two projects, and what's funny is because I had to do a little backstory, which I did in my post. It's been 18 years of straight getting jiggy with it.
Okay, yeah.
Non-stop.
That'll take a lot out of anybody.
Non-stop getting jiggy with it. But, so it'll probably be about 3 years until we see him on the big screen again, which is a lot to go without.
Yeah.
Without Big Willie. but he's ready to return. He's been producing stuff. I think the biggest thing has been the Karate Kid remake.
Mm-hmm.
So he hasn't been unbusy. But the Karate Kid remake stars his son, Jaden. So he's choosing between two projects. One is Men in Black 3, which is the third installment of the highly successful, not so great sequel.
First one was pretty good.
Franchise series. And the second is a original screenplay from Andrew Niccol.
Oh, wow.
Did Gattaca. He did Truman Show.
Wow, I am so much more excited about this. Like, I just kind of barely knew. I kind of peripherally knew about this story, but now that I realize Andrew Niccol is involved, like, that's like, definitely the direction he should go.
Could you give a summary of what the?
No, I just interrupted him. Go ahead.
It's about Will Smith will start as like a street magician, he gets separated from his daughter, who's moved to London, and then. His daughter, while in London, finds these magic candles, kind of stardusty, I guess, I don't know, that will grant her wish, any wish, and she wishes that her dad was close to her, and it's kind of like a monkey's paw thing. The state of New York, or the city of New York, breaks off from America and starts floating towards London.
That's awesome.
So it's called The City That Sailed. So between Men in Black 3 and The City That Sailed sounded like the much more promising.
Hands down. Men in Black 2 was not as good. I mean, I'm not going to say it's the worst sequel I've ever seen or anything.
Money standpoint, Men in Black 3 will rank it in.
Yeah, definitely. But creatively, I think I'd like to speak for everybody when we'd say... I mean, everybody... on Earth, when we'd like to say that we'd like to see Will Smith take on The City That Sailed. But I think, I don't know, is there any talk of who might direct City That Sailed?
No director attached.
Andrew Niccol, man, he should just do it himself. That'd like, that guy is really talented. The story kind of reminds me of a cross between, I don't know, the Prestige / Illusionist, like with the magician stuff, and then imagine that with Eddie Murphy. But, I'm joking, obviously, but it sounds a lot better than that. Well, I don't know, maybe not better than
you
Prestige.
Did you watch Imagine That?
No, I didn't. Okay. But yeah, that sounds like a great idea. I mean, the as far as I know, Men in Black 3, Tommy Lee Jones isn't even coming back. They've been talking about, like, maybe Josh Brolin coming
Josh
in
Brolin
as an
would be
agent.
Cool. Jermaine Clement.
Yeah, that's right. And Sacha Baron Cohen, right?
That's kind of cool that they've been mentioned as being offered roles. More for me is that Justin Theroux wrote screenplay, which he did
Tropic Thunder.
Tropic Thunder and Iron Man 2.
Okay.
And so that's more promising, but like still, it's like I've seen it already. I think I'm ready to get tired of that.
Yeah, it's played out. It's like, you know, I maybe wouldn't have minded seeing a sequel years ago, like right after Men in Black 2, if they could have churned it out a little bit sooner, but it's been a when did Men in Black 2? Oh, good lord. What, 2002?
Yeah.
Yeesh. Yeah, that's a bit much for what feels like kind of a throwaway sequel that doesn't necessarily need to. It's not like Back to the Future 2, where there's like a cliffhanger ending and you need the third one to tie it up and we've been waiting for 8 years
for
it.
Yeah, wouldn't
that
suck if that was the case?
But yeah, City at Sale, man, that sounds pretty awesome. I hope, obviously, we all hope that he chooses that. All right, so moving on, there's been word of Why the Last Man, the movie, possibly being taken over by Louis Leterrier. I'm not sure if that's actually how you pronounce it. It could be Louis Leterrier or Louis Leterrier. Louis Leterrier.
I think it
anyway.
Might be Louis Louis.
Oh, baby. But anyway, I'll go with Louis Leterrier and just finalize it at that. But anyway, Why the Last Man? This is a property being shopped around that is based off a comic book series that Brian K. Vaughan and Pia Guerrera created a few years ago, and it's fantastic. I know I talked to you guys before we started recording. I know you guys haven't read it yet, but
I know nothing.
It's
so I think
definitely worth reading. Like one of the best things I've ever read, regardless of like medium. You know what I mean? Like
feels like it could be completely like kind of cheesy.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
the entire premise, but it sounds like
monkey.
Yeah, okay. And for the uninitiated, just a very brief summary. The story follows a guy named Yorick and his pet monkey Ampersand, and they become the only two males on the planet. Like, all of the men, you know, humans and, like, animals, just die off in this big plague. And Yorick and his pet monkey are inexplicably the only males who are still left alive. So the entire series kind of takes place over the course of a couple of years as he, like, tries to trek across the globe to get reunited with his girlfriend, who he was in New York and she was in Australia at the time of the plague. So a government agent comes in and realizes that Yorick is, like, is the last man alive, and she is trying to get him to Washington, D.C., and he wants to go to Australia. So anyway, it's great. You guys should definitely check it out. Getting back to the movie news, though, a couple years ago, DJ Caruso, who was the director of Eagle Eye and Disturbia, had this project set up at New Line, and Shia LaBeouf was in talks to play Yorick, which personally I thought was a great idea. I thought his kind of, like, sarcastic, whatever, like, little, you know, his Shia LaBeouf's
LaBeouf,
yeah, exactly, his spiel fit really well with Yorick. I know a lot of people on the internet violently disagree with that.
We seem really, seems really young.
Yeah, and
even
and
in Eagle Eye, I thought he felt really young.
Yeah, and I think I don't know. I feel like people might have a little bit more interest in this project now that Shia is not involved anymore, because DJ Caruso is not involved anymore. The project has kind of gone through a bunch of different rewrites and things like that, but now, anyway, the new news is that Louis Leterrier is being rumored to direct the project. This is the guy who directed, I believe, Transporter 2 and the upcoming Clash of the Titans, which comes out this Friday.
Incredible Hulk.
And The Incredible Hulk, starring Edward Norton. So, I know you guys aren't necessarily familiar enough with the Why the Last Man story, but how do you think, just kind of a global scale movie like this, how do you think Leterrier might be able to handle something like that?
I think he's a perfect fit. Even just with The Incredible Hulk taking that story, the kind of global trekking that it did, and the the character it follows is actually very similar to just what I've seen from Why the Last Man, what you've explained, so.
Yeah.
Maybe a good fit.
That was one of my favorite parts of The Incredible Hulk, was like the parts where he was, where Ed Norton was in Brazil and stuff, like
very
the South
American.
Very Bourne-esque
looking,
yeah,
kind of stuff.
Yeah, I thought that that he handled that pretty well. Yeah, I actually would have liked to see DJ Caruso do it, because it would have been, you know, his kind of highest profile project to date as far as like budget and things like this, because this is a big movie, and when Caruso was involved, they were talking about it being a trilogy. So I don't know what the current status of it is, whether they're trying to cram all the events into one movie, kind of like what Scott Pilgrim is doing, or if they're gonna try to spread it out, you know, in trilogy form. But either way, I think Leterrier could bring something interesting to the table. As far as I'm just much more interested to see who the casting, like what the casting process looks like for this. I think the casting is very important for this project, especially with Yorick and the government agent, which her name is 355. There was talk of Alicia Keys being brought into the role, which I know means nothing to you guys because you're not familiar with the character, but I think somebody like Zoe Saldana would be a much better fit for this, especially considering her kind of geek factor recently with, you know, Avatar and Star Trek and The Losers and these kind of comic book related things.
Alicia Keys, so. Has her only acting role been in Smoking Aces? Or she's been in some other stuff?
She's been in some other stuff.
Smoking Aces is definitely her most
high
profile thing.
Notable.
But, yeah.
Now, I'm just wondering, just based on the premise, what is the type of tone? What film would that be comparable to?
Wow. I don't know. It's
Wow, The Last Man?
It's not really. I mean, it's so unique. Like, the subject matter is, like, deathly serious, but Yorick is like, a kind of a comedic wise ass throughout the whole thing. So it blends the kind of, like, serious nature with the comedy really well. And, you know,
seems like it would be a pretty dangerous type of story. I mean, you could easily fall apart.
Yeah, there's
with the wrong actor or the wrong director.
Yeah, there's a lot of, and there's just so much material, because it's like a 10, like if you collected the, I think it comes out in like trade paperbacks or whatever, there's like 10 different books. So there's a lot of material to fit in, especially if they take the route of doing it in one
movie. So would it be something, if I'm catching what you're saying, it's maybe something like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, where it's got a very serious tone to it, but it's got a lot of funny moments, and it's got kind of a sentimentality to it, but not... Is that exactly...
Eternal Sunshine is way more serious.
Way more serious. Okay.
Even considering the fact that, like, you know, billions of men die in this book, I think Eternal Sunshine is just, like, far and away. Like, it's in a whole nother stratosphere. But this project, I feel like...
I'm trying to think of another film that's in that... Hitchhiker's Guide.
Maybe something more akin to that.
Idiocracy.
Not so much. It's tough to
compare.
I'm
not trying to pigeonhole.
Yeah, no,
I'm
no,
just trying
I,
to because I'm
did
unfamiliar
a better
with
idea.
The material.
Yeah, I mean,
stop trying to pigeonhole it, dude.
I would just say everybody, you know, you guys included, definitely just check it out. At least read the first book. Even if you don't finish it, you'll have a better idea of what it does. The books aren't that long, and you'll know right away, you know, after reading the first book, whether you want to finish the series or not, because it's all very kind of consistent throughout. Yeah. So it's great storytelling, and Brian K. Vaughan, who was a writer on Lost, and he's blowing up recently.
Okay. I'm surprised that
Firefly Serenity is that kind of
maybe as far as like creating the world.
Yeah,
I think very kind of self-contained thing like that might kind of equal that vision a little bit. But
has Matthew Fox been kind of thrown around as someone?
Yorick isn't younger. I feel like he's like early 20s or something. It's been a little while since I've read it, so I'm not sure of his exact age, but...
I guess a guy of Matthew Fox's age wouldn't trek across the world for a girlfriend. It'd be like, alright.
I don't know, just the wise-ass kind of comments and stuff wouldn't necessarily flow as well from somebody as somebody older, you know, like a big part of the story is Yorick growing up, and his kind of like, you know, personal problems and conquering those, you know, throughout the thing. So getting somebody who's older already would kind of take away from that character transformation, I think. But I don't know. Interesting that Leterrier is being tossed around for this project. So, any fans of Why the Last Man out there, leave us thoughts in the comments or whatever about what you think about this this news story. So, another thing that happened this week was Edgar Wright's trailer for Scott Pilgrim vs. the World was released.
If we're gonna date, you may have to defeat my 70 Valexes.
You have 70 Valex boyfriends?
Bingo. Consider our fight begun.
And I have to fight?
Defeat your 70 Valexes?
Pretty much.
Prepare to die.
What?
What's up? How's life? He seems nice.
We all have baggage.
Yeah, well, my baggage doesn't try and kill me every 5 minutes.
Next time, we don't date the girl with 11 evil ex-boyfriends.
7.
Oh, that's not that bad.
And this thing freaking blew my mind. I've read all the Scott Pilgrim books, like comic series created by Brian Lee O'Malley. And right now there's 5 books. There's the 6th is coming out, I believe, in June or July, right before the movie premieres in August. And this trailer is amazing. Like, if you guys haven't seen it yet, it's up in our featured section, and you should check it out, because this, like, the Scott Pilgrim, it's so difficult to explain the story because it's so unique. It's unlike anything I've ever seen before. It blends, like, video game humor and kind of just, like, such a unique style and a vision from O'Malley's comics. And Edgar Wright, it looks like, from, like, I've been following this project for a while and looking at all the production videos and stuff like that as the, you know, because he was updating it while he was shooting, releasing pictures of the cast and stuff like that. This process has been going on for a while, but this trailer is the first footage that we've really seen from the movie, and it looks unbelievable with as well as he captured, because there's sequences that remind me in practice of like 300 and Sin City, where it's like panel by panel almost, like lifted straight from the comic and translated onto a screen in a way that we've never seen before. What did you guys think of this trailer?
Blown away. Yeah, I have never read any of the graphic. I didn't know anything about this film until probably I heard sprinklings about it, and then the trailers when I really got really did a little more searching about it.
Right.
But I just loved the way, just the whole tone of the of it. Just I love the feel. It, you have the cool little video game sounds in it. There's a moment I think where Jason Schwartzman pulls out a blade and it's got like the pixelization on it. It's not like, it doesn't have like that Star Wars clean blade kind of thing, and it's not like in a video game where it's just kind of got that weird ghosty trail type thing. It had its own vibe. I love how I went through, because when the featured we try to pull stuff out, and usually the trailers usually we'll pull graphics out for the featured, and I'm just going through frame by frame, and they do so many things to this visually that are extremely graphical. And there's things in it which are one frame that's subtle, like a flash.
Yeah.
And I look at it and I go, that must have taken someone at least an hour or more to do that one frame.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a flash. But when you watch it, you feel that flash because you go, why does it feel so graphical? Because they're putting all these graphical elements or sneaking them in. And just the sound design. I think there was a little Versus and a KO. And like you hear these little bleeps and stuff like that, and stuff things like that, it's just like, that's great. And I think if this trailer has exactly all that feel, plus I think the great music choice and all that stuff, I think this could be like one of those I have a feeling that like this and maybe Kick-Ass could definitely launch a new flavor of comic book movie, that because we've all seen the very, like, I think one of the things that, because the success of The Dark Knight and stuff like that, people are saying, let's make everything dark and gritty. And
right.
It's like, no, you got to make things original, and you got to make things true to the voice of the material. Some of the reason I loved Speed Racer is I felt like it perfectly was that manga just, and the cartoon just totally brought to life. And just looking at the panels of Scott Pilgrim, seeing some of the side-by-side comparison, I'm like, okay, this is obviously has the true feeling
right.
reinterpreted into motion on screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I very well put. I think that, like you said, with this and Kick-Ass, these are game-changing movies that are coming out. These are like, I think this more is like maybe like the Roger Rabbit of our times, where you're just like, this can, it so straddles the realistic and just out there. You know?
Yeah.
We see Chris Evans' character just completely just throwing around Michael Cera and crashes into a building where it should kill him.
Yeah.
But it'll walk that just enough.
I think there's something danger. About it that has an approachable sensibility. I think when you see a lot of these types of properties, I don't think you can go, oh, I could see so-and-so. I love Watchmen, the graphic novel, and then I watch the film and go, I don't think I could recommend this to A, B, and C.
Right.
I think this is the type of film where I could go, I wouldn't feel weird recommending it. I would maybe just, if maybe their taste in humor might be slightly different than
right.
maybe, but this seems like it's a broader type of
yeah.
film, even though it feels like it's got a very selective audience.
Yeah. And I love, like, it's one of my favorite trailers of the past few years, too, just in the way that it's structured. Because in the very beginning of the trailer, it looks very much like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. You know, you've got Ramona Flowers, played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead, with, like, the multicolored hair and stuff. And, like, they're walking through these kind of bleak Canadian landscapes of, like, very harsh snow and stuff when it's just them kind of juxtaposed against it, and like the, you know, kind of sweeping text or whatever, and then all of a sudden it freaking just kicks into like this ass kicking of like ridiculous.
Yeah, and I love
like,
how the music comes in, and it's hopefully that's in the
yeah.
film. You know,
yeah,
usually it's not always.
The music is a huge part of Scott Pilgrim because he's
okay.
in a band. He plays bass for a band called Sex Ba-Bomb, which is based off of the like the Ba-Bombs and the Mario in the, like, the little bombs that blow up and mess with you in that game.
Nice.
You know, there's touches like that that are kind of riddled throughout this entire series, where it's very like,
which is cool because like you're I showed the trailer to my wife and she's not gonna get the references that are
yeah.
in it, it's insane video games, but she might get some of the pop culture references.
Yeah,
she might. There just seems to be so many deep references to so many things that might hit a little bit for everyone.
Yeah, and I think a big difference, especially with as far as like the pop culture stuff goes, is like it's not like, you know, an early DreamWorks movie where they're just referencing pop culture references just to do it and seem relevant for the time. Like, these are very integrated things that are like, it's all character driven. You know, that's
yeah.
characters are like,
and world driven.
Yeah,
just the rules of Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah,
it's like you cut someone, you turn into coins.
Yeah, it's so weird that there is this like psychotic dichotomy of like, you know, like you were saying, he flings him, you know, 60 yards up into a building and he's fine, but at the same time Scott himself is dealing with these very like personal problems
yeah.
and stuff, so it's weird that they can, you know, inhabit the same world. This movie, I'm really looking forward to it. I said when the trailer came out, I tweeted, I was like, man, I after seeing this, like, I thought Tron Legacy was my most anticipated movie of the year. But this and Inception, but that's a side
yeah.
thing. But I mean, those three movies are definitely like the ones that I'm absolutely, you know, can't miss, won't miss type of thing. But
it's funny as you talk about how it kind of it goes from like this very serious, regular looking film,
mm-hmm.
and it kicks into that stuff. I'm excited to be in a theater and a group of people who aren't familiar with the movie at all. And kind of watching, like, kind of roll their eyes. Oh, it's Michael Cera and the chick, and then for it to kick in and just kind of see their or see their reaction to it.
Yeah, and that's another thing too. Is like Michael Cera, you know, even in this trailer, it looks like he's kind of doing the same Michael Cera spiel that we've seen from him. This character is a little bit more aggressive and confident than that, than
yeah.
his usual kind of awkward, gangly self. So. I'm really looking forward to it, and people are saying that this is, like, a game-changer as far as his, you know, what we'll see from him as well. And another little brief side note about it, this cast could not have been better selected, because every single person, with the exception of Michael Cera, kind of looks like Scott Pilgrim in the comics, but every other person looks like dead on accurate to their counterparts. Like Aubrey Plaza's in it. It's got a great cast. Like I'm not even going to go through and list everybody, but it really looks fantastic. So
Brandon Routh,
yeah,
and Anna Kendrick,
yeah, and it's funny that now that Chris Evans is Captain America, Scott Pilgrim is fighting Brandon Routh, Superman, yeah, and Captain America, Chris Evans. So it's funny.
Evans slash Human Torch.
Yeah, and one more thing: the books apparently diverge from the movie, which is interesting because Brian Lee O'Malley was still writing the books as the movie was in production. So apparently they share similar elements up to about the third book, and then they like wildly change. Like the endings are going to be completely different from in the movie and the series of books. So
just kind of begin with Kick-Ass as well.
Yeah, I think so. I haven't read Kick-Ass yet, but I think it'll be interesting.
I think
because
the way something ends in a movie has to have a very different way than it something would end in like a graphic novel.
It almost feels like. Well, what's the point of a fan going to see it? I already saw it in a more in depth. Usually with something like that, you know, in a book or something like that, like it's
more descriptive.
Yeah, more descriptive.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is, you know, with them.
I'm just thinking the change they made to Watchmen.
Yeah. They kept some of it, but the squid, man, the squid. I wanted to see the squid.
Spoiler.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you haven't seen Watchmen by now, you shouldn't be listening to this podcast. But the cool thing about it is, like, if you like the ending of the graphic novel or the books series or what, the comics, then maybe you know what I mean? Like, there's two definitive stories, versions of the story out there for people, and if you'd like one, you can, you know, you have the choice to
the other. Did the creator work on?
Yeah, he's been very.
I think that makes a huge difference than other writers writing a different direction.
Yeah.
Because he may have, like, while they're producing it, he goes, "Oh, I already made this ending, but like, I got this crazy idea that I think might be better for a movie."
Yeah, well, he gave them Edgar Wright and his people notes and stuff about where he was going with the series, so they kind of have like a little bit of a structure idea, but but yeah, it'll be cool to see. I'm really looking forward to this movie. August can't come quickly enough for me. And that's going to wrap it up for this week's show. Thanks for tuning in. You can always find more geek news, movie news, things of that sort at geektyrant.com. Check us out on iTunes. You can subscribe to us if you're viewing this podcast, listening to this podcast from the page on the website. There's a button there to click to subscribe on iTunes. If you're already subscribing on iTunes, come back to the site. You know, we miss you over here, so check it out. And we got cool stuff for you coming all week. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/geektyrant, and facebook.com/geektyrant. Become a fan of us over there. And next week, we've got Clash of the Titans coming out. This is the remake directed by Louis Leterrier, who we actually talked about earlier. Yeah, so that should be interesting. We'll see. One of us can get a chance to check that out in the theaters. We can maybe talk about it next week. So, take care, you guys. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.